Star Wars, Dark Saber, by Kevin J. Anderson. The Banthas plodded in single file, leaving only a narrow trail of scuffed footprints winding across the dunes. Twin suns hammered down upon the procession. Waves of heat rippled like cloaking shields, blurring the distance and making the oven of the dune sea seem an indistinct illusion. The Banthas moved silently, except for the rustle of their shaggy fur. Swathed in strips of cloth, the Tusken raiders astride the shaggy beasts looked from side to side, keeping watch. Wrapped entirely in bandages, Han Solo looked out through narrow metal tubes designed to shield the eyes from blowing desert grit. His mouth was covered with a corroded metal breath mask that filtered sand and contained a small internal moisturizer to make Tatooine's fiery air more breathable. He rode his Bantha, hoping to remain unnoticed in the middle of the procession. Han took another sip of his precious water. He couldn't complain. This had, after all, been his own crazy suggestion. He just hadn't expected Luke Skywalker would be so eager to agree. The mission was vital to the New Republic, and Han had to follow through. The procession trudged through the sand, winding up the crest of a shifting dune that stood like a towering sentinel in the arid ocean. Finally, Han could remain silent no longer. He whispered into the short-range transmitter implanted in his breath mask, "Luke, what's going on? They're up to something." Luke Skywalker seemed far more comfortable in his disguise than Han felt. He had grown up on Tatooine, of course, but his voice now sounded bone-weary as it came over the pickup in Han's ear.
"A few of the Sand People have vague suspicions, but they haven't centered on us yet. With the Force, I'm managing to distract anyone who pays too much attention to you or me. Wait until they're preoccupied, and I'll explain more."
The lead rider reached the peak of the Sand Mountain. The other Banthas plodded up, surrounding their leader, who raised his cloth-wrapped arm, brandishing a wicked-looking gaffy stick. Behind the leader sat a single passenger, slumped and sullen. Was he being bestowed some kind of honor, Han wondered, or was he being exiled from the tribe? The passenger let himself drop from the shaggy beast, and the other Sand People climbed down from their Banthas.
"All right, they're distracted, I can explain. The lone Tusken raider lost his Bantha 3 days ago. A crate dragon killed it, and unfortunately our friend there got away."
"What do you mean, unfortunately?" Han mumbled.
"The Sand People have a very close relationship with their Banthas. It's a mental bonding, almost like a marriage. When one member of the pair is killed, the other feels like an amputee."
Unconsciously, Luke flexed his cyborg hand.
"Many of these Tusken raiders believe our friend should have died beside his Bantha, no matter what the circumstances."
"So, are they just going to kill him?"
"Yes and no. They believe the spirit of the dead Bantha must decide. There are wild Banthas in the desert. If the spirit wishes for him to bond with another mount, our friend will find a free wild Bantha in the desert, join with it, and return in triumph to the tribe. However, if the Bantha's spirit wants his rider to join him in death, then the outcast will wander hopelessly in the desert until he dies."
The Sand People waited for the exile to make the first move. Finally, with a cry of triumph or challenge, he plunged down the steep and shifting slope of the dune. The Sand People tilted their heads toward the burning sky and let out a loud, ululating cry that made Han shudder. That night, the group camped in a thick maze of rocky badlands, punctuated by pockmarked stone needles rising out of the windblown sand. Darkness fell quickly with the double sunset, and the temperature plummeted. The rocks continued to throb with stored heat, but they quickly cooled.
"I'm going to get some rest," Han said.
"Can't you wait until they all go to sleep and then catch a nap yourself?"
Luke shook his head.
"I don't dare. If I stop monitoring their thoughts, they might suddenly realize we're not supposed to be with them. Besides, a Jedi can go a long time without rest.
Whatever you say, buddy.
We should reach Jabba's palace by tomorrow, Luke said with weary hope.
I can't wait. I mean, I had so much fun the last time I was there.
The sand people roused themselves in the frigid darkness. Luke moved more sluggishly than ever. Han was worried about his friend. Luke was exhausted, but also suffering from frustration and depression because of his inability to help Callista, the Jedi woman he loved, regain her lost powers. And now, after days without sleep, hiding in the midst of ferocious desert nomads, Luke's stamina was wearing thin. By mid-morning, with both suns climbing the crystal blue sky, the Tusken Raiders topped a rocky rise and looked across the painted desert to the ruins of Jabba the Hutt's palace.
When I split off, follow me, Luke said. I'm going to distract them so they won't notice us separating from them.
Far across the rolling ocean of sand, the wind was creating a sand whirl. Han suspected it was a natural occurrence, but Luke used it to his advantage. He nudged his bantha to the right, splitting off from the line of Tusken Raiders. Han yanked on the rough, curved horn of his mount, urging it away from the others. None of the Tusken Raiders turned in their direction. A harsh wind whistled through the canyon, moaning among the open minarets of Jabba's palace. Han peeled the bandages off and removed the metal eye coverings, tossing them to the ground. He drew a deep breath of the dusty air and coughed, but he grinned at his companion.
Boy, I'm glad to get rid of those.
Luke carefully unwrapped himself, stuffing the rags inside his tattered desert robes. Han shook his head as he looked at the ruins. Jabba had not been the first inhabitant of the huge palace. It had been built centuries before the Hutt crime lord was born, or hatched, or whatever happened to baby huts. Long ago, exiled monks of the Bomar Order had found an isolated spot on the backwater world Tatooine and had built a towering monastery remaining aloof from the planet's other inhabitants. Sometime later, the bandit Al-Kara had broken into the monastery and used parts of it as his hideout as he preyed upon moisture farmers. The monks ignored him utterly. Since that time, a succession of undesirables had located their headquarters in portions of the monastery, the latest of whom had been Jabba the Hutt. But after Jabba's death at the Great Pit of Carkoon, a civil war had occurred among his minions as each scrambled to steal the Hutt crime lord's possessions, ransacking the palace. Through some of his underworld connections, Han had received disturbing rumors that other Hutts had recently been poking around in the abandoned palace looking for something. Han needed to find out what it was. The corroded durasteel door loomed in front of them. Over the years, the control circuits had crossed or decayed, and the heavy barrier had risen partway up. Drifts of sand had collected in the gap. As soon as Luke touched a button on the lichen-covered external panel, another panel creaked open in the center of the door, and a bobbing artificial eye extended, swaying on a rusted metal stalk. Jabba's surveillance system. The machine's words were garbled and slurred, as if its programming had become defective. Han reached into the folds of his robe, pulled out his blaster pistol, and blew the thing into smoking shards and sparking wires. He turned to Luke with a roguish grin.
I've always wanted to do that. That thing was always obnoxious.
A blaster bolt shot from behind them, spanged against the metal door. Han whirled.
What?
Luke and Han's banthas snorted in greeting. Another blaster bolt shot down from behind them to burn a smoking hole through Han's robe, barely missing his chest. The sand people thundered down the canyon, whipping their banthas to a frenzy and waving gaffy sticks. Ducking under the door, Han said,
I think you stopped distracting them too soon, kid.
Inside, Luke found the inner control panel and grabbed at a bunch of rusted wires. There was a single hopeless spark, then the entire panel went dead. Han crouched down with his blaster pistol.
Better do something quick, Luke.
One of the sand people fired under the door. The energy bolt ricocheted on the flagstone floor. Han fired his own blaster at the bandaged feet he could see, and the feet leapt backward. Luke gave up on the control panel and stood with his fists clenched at his sides. He concentrated. The tracks groaned as he moved the mechanisms holding the door in place. Suddenly, it crashed down, belching up clouds of dust. Han heaved a long sigh.
Well, that was fun. I don't suppose you remember to bring along a portable glow lamp.
Luke reached into the folds of his robe and removed his lightsaber.
Always come prepared.
The vibrant green blade made Han shield his eyes. Inside the abandoned main chamber where the bloated hut had pronounced fate on his helpless victim, scavengers made noises. Pebbles trickled from a loose block in the wall.
The Bomar monks are still here, Luke said. But they don't seem to have been anxious to reclaim the runes Jabba used. From what I heard, when the monks reach their greatest state of enlightenment, they undergo some kind of surgery that removes their brain and places it in a life support jar. It's their highest achievement, keeps them from being distracted by physical diversions, leaving them to ponder the great mysteries.
Han snorted.
Good thing Jedi don't go for nonsense like that.
The two whirled. Approaching them were the whirring servo motors and articulated mechanical legs of an automated steel spider. Slung under the legs where the body of the spider would have been hung a jar filled with clear fluid that bubbled and gurgled, pulsing life support into a human brain.
Uh-oh,
Han said.
It's one of the monks.
No. Are you friends of Jabba's?
The creature's voice was processed through a tiny speaker mounted on its legs.
Not exactly,
Han said.
Who are you?
The spider leg skittered from side to side as if its brain had lost control.
I am Mazor. I was once a rival of Jabba's. We had a confrontation, and I lost. Jabba took me as a prisoner to the Bomar monks and ordered them to perform their surgery on me. Jabba kept me around his palace as a joke, but now Jabba is dead, and I am the last one laughing.
Han and Luke looked at each other. Han lowered his blaster.
We're enemies of Jabba, too. In fact, we were there at the Great Pit of Carcoon when he was killed.
Then I am greatly in your debt.
In that case, perhaps you can help us. We heard rumors. If you have been here in the palace, you might have seen what we need to know.
Yes, many strangers have come here recently. Many intruders searching.
What were they looking for?
Han asked.
Information. Jabba's information. He had many Imperial secrets.
Imperial secrets? Luke said, but the Empire has fallen. What could the Hutts possibly want with Imperial information?
Imperial information. Imperial Information Center, the great computer base on Coruscant. Jabba had obtained secret passwords. He knew how to access the Emperor's most heavily protected information.
Han was startled.
You mean the Hutts can break into our computer center?
Jabba had ways of accessing them.
Tell me, did the Hutts find what they were looking for?
Yes. They can now get what they wish. They intend to create their own bargaining force, an invincible weapon. The Hutt crime syndicate will be more powerful than the rebels or what's left of the Empire.
Luke bent closer to the brain in the jar.
Do you know any details of their plans, any specifics?
No. Beware of everything the Hutts do. They have the key they sought. And now they will move on to their next step.
Han nodded grimly, looking at Luke.
We have to get back to Coruscant and report to Leia. The New Republic needs to be on guard.
Luke switched off his lightsaber, plunging the room into shadow, but he reached forward to rub his fingers on the edges of Mazor's brain jar.
Is there anything we can do for you? I might be able to help you find peace in your existence.
No, Jedi Knight. The Bomar monks have already given as much solace as they could in that respect. What you must do for me is stop the Hutt's plan. Humiliate them, and I will remain here alone.
The spider legs rocked back and forth.
I will continue to laugh at Jabba. That is my reward.
Since their banthas had run off, leaving them stranded at Jabba's palace, Han suggested to Luke that they investigate the vehicle hangars in the lower levels. Han and Luke worked together, swapping components, making modifications from what they had on hand. At last they operated a clanking mechanical side door, letting the wash of yellow sunlight scour the filthy hangar bay. They climbed aboard two battered swoops that reminded Luke of the speeder bikes he and his sister Leia had ridden so recklessly through the forests on Endor. Luke sat on the dented metal seat, trying to be comfortable on the scraps of the petrified leather covering. It's been a long time since I did something like this, Luke said. Feels good.
Just like old times, kid.
Han powered up the humming repulsor lifts.
Let's head back to Mos Eisley spaceport so we can get out of here.
Wait, Han. Luke had a pensive expression. There's something I have to do first. We'll need to make a side trip. Circle around to the Jundland wastes.
Han looked at him, pursing his lips. Then he nodded. Yeah, I thought you had something else on your mind from the way you were acting. Anything to do with Callista?
Luke nodded, but gave no details.
I guess I should know by now that when I'm with the Jedi, nothing's simple and straightforward.
As events continued around him, Luke forced himself to keep moving. The news of the Hutt's secret plan alarmed him, but his heart ached at being separated from Callista. He longed to be with her. He longed to help her. Following threads of the Force, he and Callista had connected with each other's personalities from the very first. They had linked, like two pieces of a precise puzzle. Being Jedi, they knew it in a way that few other lovers could understand. Though Callista had been born decades before Luke, her spirit had been frozen within the computer of the automated dreadnought, the Eye of Palpatine, after she had given her life in an attempt to destroy the Imperial ship. Luke had fallen in love with Callista's luminous form until she came back to life in the body of a woman named Kray, who had been one of his most brilliant students. Kray had sacrificed herself to destroy the dreadnought, and in a devastating irony, Callista had lost all her Jedi abilities in the transformation. Callista was alive again, but not the same, not completely there. They could no longer link with each other, mind and essence. They'd had only those heady days to remember, trapped together aboard the Eye of Palpatine. But their memories were enough to galvanize the deep love between them and make them keep trying to find an answer. Luke would never give up until he found a way to bring Callista back whole. Luke stood anxious and alone, feeling like a prodigal son outside the ramshackle collapsed hut that had once been the home of Obi-Wan Kenobi. Han waited by his repaired swoop, drinking the last of their water. Luke swallowed and stepped forward, his footsteps crunching in the silence. He had not been here in many years. The door had fallen off its hinges. Part of the clay front wall had fallen in. Gingerly, he ducked low and stepped into the home of his first mentor. Lights slanted in from cracks in the walls. Dust motes drifted like gold dust through the sunbeams. The place smelled of mold, empty shadows, and ghosts. Luke stood in the middle of the room, breathing deeply, turning around, trying to sense the presence he desperately needed to see. This was the place where Obi-Wan Kenobi had told Luke of the Force. Obi-Wan and Yoda had begun to prepare him, but had left Luke with so many questions, so much knowledge unlearned. And the insane Joris Sabaoth had been able to tell him only perversions of what a true Jedi needed to know. The Emperor had shown Luke dark side ways, but Luke needed to understand so much more. He needed to know how to save Callista.
Ben.
He closed his eyes, calling out with his mind as well as his voice. He tried to penetrate the invisible walls of the Force and reach Obi-Wan Kenobi, who had visited him numerous times before saying he could never speak with Luke again.
Ben, I need you,
Luke said. Luke paused and listened and sensed, but felt nothing. If he could not summon Obi-Wan's spirit here in his old dwelling, Luke doubted he could find his former teacher ever again. Luke swallowed his despair, vowing never to give up his quest to help Callista. Perhaps that was the message. Obi-Wan's silence proved to him that he could not rely on his old teachers to help him. Luke would have to solve his own problems. When he stepped back outside, the blazing sunlight washed over him like a cleansing flood. He took a deep breath and went to meet Han. Han Solo stood in the shade beside his floating swoop and wiped sweat from his forehead. Well, kid, find what you were looking for?
No. And yes.
Han shook his head.
Leave it to a Jedi never to give you a straight answer.
In this case, there is no straight answer, Han.
I'm done with Tatooine. We can go back to Mos Eisley now. We have to warn the New Republic what the Hutts are up to.
storm of rocks swept across space, smashing everything in its path. The Hoth asteroid belt was a nightmarish navigation hazard. A few small rocks collided against the Orko Skymine ship's forward deflector shields, then vanished into bright plumes of vaporized dust. On the foredeck, Durga the Hutt rested on his levitating platform like a slab of raw flesh, watching out the command viewports of his expeditionary ship. Durga saw only one thing as he watched the colliding asteroids. Resources. Vast, untapped resources containing every sort of metal and mineral that could be of use in the Hutt's secret new project.
"Increase deflector shields,"
Durga said, puffing his cheeks and stretching the smeared birthmark on the left side of his head. His minions scrambled to do his bidding. Weequays, Gamorreans, human slaves, and others clustered about the expeditionary ship's controls, bickering about how best to implement the order. Beside the slug-like Hutt, Imperial General Sulimar turned from a status screen and snapped to attention. His chest was plastered with medals from previous campaigns in which he'd been victorious, and which he never ceased blabbering about. He smiled grimly.
"Mining Remote Alpha has already begun its hunting and processing routine. Mining Remote Beta has just been unleashed."
As they approached, the mammoth ore processing unit began to stand out.
"A magnificent machine," Durga thought.
The giant cargo container had a front end of moving mechanical mouthparts and turbolaser turrets for blasting asteroids to rubble. Durga watched as it stuffed debris into the processing maw, chewed it up, spat out the useless slag, and sorted the precious metals. The newly designed automated mining remotes directed the mechanical behemoths to hunt down the purest concentrations of metal in the asteroid belt and to dismantle the rocks and exploit the treasure.
"They seem to be functioning perfectly," Sulimar said.
Durga let loose a deep belly laugh.
"Naturally. My pet scientist, Bevel Lemelisk, designed them. Perhaps you've heard of his other work. Lemelisk was in charge of construction of both the first and the second Death Stars."
Sulimar's eyebrows shot up, showing how impressed he was.
"Bevel Lemelisk will soon be hard at work overseeing the construction of our new weapon."
"Beta is picking up a very high concentration of metal," one of the horned Deveronian diagnosticians said. "It's amazingly pure."
The mining remote altered course and increased speed toward its new target. Durga watched with growing glee.
"There must be even more resources out here than we expected," another tech said. "Mining remote Alpha has found a rich source as well. It's headed this way."
General Sulimar frowned.
"Do you think they could have picked up the same target?"
The Deveronian raised his clawed hands in panic.
"Alpha and Beta haven't picked up the same target. They've detected each other."
"Well, shut them down,"
Durga said.
"An unforeseen programming glitch."
The Deveronian hammered instructions into his control panels.
"I can't, sir. I don't have the override code."
Durga bellowed.
"Well, who does?"
"Only Bevel Lemelisk, sir."
"Get him up here,"
Durga shouted.
"But he asked not to be disturbed, sir,"
the Deveronian said. Durga gurgled in rage at the comment and punched a control button on his repulsor sled. Suddenly, the Deveronian technician's chair erupted with electrical fire. The alien's skin blackened and burned, and in seconds, the Deveronian was a steaming skeletal corpse.
"Now, would someone else like to get Bevel Lemelisk for me?"
Durga boomed.
"Before it's too late."
One of the human technicians leapt off his chair and ran to the turbo lift. Despite his outburst, Durga knew they could never rouse the weapons engineer fast enough to do any good. With outrage and horror, he watched as the two gargantuan machines came together. The giant machines were mindlessly murderous, blasting each other's hull plates, ripping metal arms, and stuffing them into processing maws. Durga felt fury boiling inside him, and he hammered his fists on the control panels. He looked around at his technicians, seeking someone worthless to blame. But all of them were standing at attention beside their panels, safely away from their chairs. Bevel Lemelisk scowled as he trudged along the corridors of the Orko Skymine ship, huffing with the effort and with annoyance at Durga's constant demands. Seeing the weapons engineer, Durga issued a roar that sounded like a cross between a belch and a boiler explosion. Lemelisk blinked his pale eyes, and his attention flickered to the bridge windows.
Uh-oh. Durga eased his repulsor sled closer to Lemelisk.
I am most displeased with your performance, Lemelisk.
The Emperor had said exactly those words just before he had executed Bevel Lemelisk for the first time. Shortly after the Death Star was expected to crush the rebel base on Yavin 4, Bevel Lemelisk had been summoned to meet with Emperor Palpatine deep within the Imperial Palace.
My Emperor, I trust you have received word by now that our Death Star has been destroyed at the secret rebel base, Lemelisk said.
I have received word, Palpatine said.
With that, a flexible wire cage dropped from the ceiling and fell squarely over the weapons engineer. Tiny openings appeared in the polished stone floor, leading down to a black unknown. He heard the scrabbling of sharp feet.
I am most displeased with your performance, Lemelisk, the Emperor said.
The eight-legged, hard-shelled insect shone a deep blue as it clambered into the light and paused to probe the air with waving antennae. From other openings, identical beetles emerged. They swooped toward him, sinking mandibles with serrated razor edges into the thick flesh of his palm.
These are piranha beetles, the Emperor said. And now, I'm going to watch them devour you, bit by bit.
Later, Lemelisk had awakened, completely disoriented. Inside the cage, he saw a carcass that had been stripped down to gnawed bones and shreds of clothing, the clothing he himself had worn only moments ago.
You'll grow accustomed to your clone in a moment, the Emperor said. It is an uncertain skill at best, and the Jedi I stole the technique from was reluctant to give me thorough instructions, but it seems to work.
Since then, Lemelisk had died several times. Now, as he faced Durga the Hutt and Imperial General Sulamar, he sought some reservoir of strength within himself. He bowed to Durga. We can recover from this. I promise to rectify the problem, Lord Durga. But while I'm doing that, you must focus on our main goal. The primary item on our agenda must be to get those plans from the Imperial Information Center. In the plush chambers of the New Republic's Chief of State, Leia Organa Solo hurried to make herself presentable. Beside her, Han Solo fiddled with his shirt fasteners and cursed the tiny glittering insignia he was trying to pin on his diplomatic finery.
I hate this, Leia. I love you enough to do this, but I don't enjoy getting dressed up even to meet people I like. And I don't exactly count those overgrown mudworms among the people I like.
Leia placed her hand on his shoulder. Do you think I like it any more than you do? But Durga is making some new kind of overture, she said. It's a diplomatic necessity that we receive the fat slug and hear what he has to say. As Durga's entourage passed into the reception room, Leia saw that the Hutt crime lord knew the value of spectacle. Durga reclined on a broad pallet that drifted above the floor on a cushion of repulsor lifts. But he moved forward through the plodding efforts of a team of Gamorrean slaves lashed to the floating platform by red velvet bonds. If anything, Durga was even fatter than Jabba. His childlike hands seemed out of place on his swollen body. Dozens of Toril, semi-intelligent hairy creatures that Durga kept as workers and pets, swarmed him and his retainers like large simian lice. The creatures were each about the size of Leia's forearm, with grayish-brown fur and four arms that ended in dexterous fingers. As he was a protocol droid, 3PO was the first to speak.
The New Republic gives a greeting to mighty Durga.
I am most interested in your mission to Coruscant, Leia said. What brings a Hutt crime lord to the legitimate government of the New Republic?
Durga spread his arms wide.
Madam President, your words wound me. We are all trying to do what is best for ourselves. The Hutts do not want war. And I don't believe your fledgling government can afford a drawn-out struggle either. Unlike the Empire, we Huts have an invisible web of influence in places you cannot imagine.
He blinked his heavy-lidded eyes.
However, I do not come here to make threats, but an overture of peace. I propose that the Huts form an alliance with the New Republic, become commercial partners.
Leia tried to keep the skepticism from her voice. Is that the only reason?
It is our greatest wish to become respectable businessmen rather than powerful outlaws.
I see.
I wish to continue these negotiations at some time in the future. Allow me to extend an invitation for you to make a visit to Nal Hutta at your convenience.
Leia nodded, noncommittal. I'll consider it, Durga. She smiled diplomatically, vowing to herself that all the stars in the galaxy would burn to cold ash before she ever entered into an alliance with the Huts. Callista sat alone in the jungles of Yavin 4 as night gathered. Near the horizon, lambent glow from the setting gas giant streaked the sky with color. Masasi trees rose tall against the deepening purple. She had not gone far from the great temple where Luke Skywalker had founded his Jedi Academy. The pyramid had endured for thousands of years and stood now like a jagged black cutout in the dusk. Callista sat in a clearing, cross-legged in front of a campfire she had built from dry brush, concentrating, allowing no distractions. The warmth of the fire spread out in waves, driving back the damp coolness that settled over the jungle lowlands. She stared into the flames and pushed. But she felt nothing, not a flicker of her former abilities. She sensed no communion with the fire. Luke's other Jedi trainees could make the flames dance, pulling them out like rubber sheets to make faces, images, twisting them into braids. It was a simple Jedi exercise. Callista had learned how to do it many years ago. But now, try as she might, the flames would not respond. Her Jedi powers had abandoned her. As Callista readied herself for bed, she answered a summons at her door, surprised to find the Jedi woman Tian standing in the corridor, looking anxious.
I found something in the records.
Tian had a narrow face, pointed chin, high cheekbones, and large eyes framed by long silvery hair.
It isn't much, but I thought you'd like to know.
Come in, Callista said. What is it? Tian raised her pale eyebrows.
You might like to know that at least you aren't alone. Not in history, at any rate.
Callista perked up. Other Jedi have lost their powers before?
Yes. There was another.
Tian sat down on the rumpled covers of Callista's sleeping pallet.
Ulic Keldroma, a great warlord who fought in the Sith War on the side of evil with Exar Kun. He betrayed Kun and led the Jedi Knights here, where they trapped Kun's spirit in the temples and laid waste to the entire moon. But by turning to the dark side, Ulic Keldroma damned himself forever. And in a final confrontation, he was stripped of his Force ability.
But how? Callista said.
The Force is in all things. How can one Jedi Knight strip another of the ability to use it? Ulic was not deprived of anything. In a manner of speaking, he was blindfolded to the Force. Ulic no longer had access to it.
But how could I have had such blinders placed upon me? Callista said. Was it just a consequence of my spirit entering another body?
Kray's body,
Tian said, with a slight tightening in her throat. Callista remembered that the silver-haired Jedi woman had known Kray well, had trained with her, and now Callista's spirit inhabited the same body.
I can't explain it, Tian said with a shrug. I can only tell you what I've learned. Every piece of information adds more to the solution. Someday we'll find the answer.
Callista nodded and stood to usher Tian out the door. The great temple had fallen silent with late evening.
The other Jedi trainees either sleeping or meditating in their own chambers. Out in the corridor, R2-D2 puttered along the flagstones, looking lost without Luke Skywalker. Callista vowed to keep trying, keep searching. There had to be some way. She had waited for so long inside the computer, and now that she had found her love in Luke, she would not let him go without a fight. But she could not be a part of him, true Jedi to true Jedi, until she regained her ability to use the Force. She couldn't give everything to him until then. Their time had been so brief before they had been snatched apart, left with only their loss, to look into each other's eyes with an invisible barrier between them that neither could breach. Callista swallowed, but her throat remained dry. Despite her reservations, she could not wait until Luke Skywalker returned to her. When Luke did return several days later, Callista knew instantly that he had been unsuccessful. She was unable to read him the way she once had, but she could tell by his demeanor that he had not found the answers he sought. She met Luke on the landing grid in front of the pyramid. The other Jedi students emerged one by one to welcome their master home. Callista ran to him. Luke moved quickly, delighted to see her. He caught her in his arms, holding her close, but said nothing. She kissed him, then said quietly, "General Kenobi did not answer your summons." He looked at her strangely, blinking his cool blue eyes, then smiled. "I keep forgetting you were a Jedi so long ago that you knew Obi-Wan when he was a young military commander." He averted his gaze. "No, he didn't answer. But that doesn't mean anything. I'm going to keep trying. And so are you." "You can bet on that," she agreed. "Let's go greet the others." Callista slipped her arm around his waist. He held her, and the two walked toward the temple. "I'm sorry you didn't find the answer," she said. "But just having you back makes me happy." "That much I can give you," Luke said. "But I hope we can have more. So much more."
"We will,"
Callista said. A heavy, warm rain sheared through the jungle, pattering on the glossy leaves. Luke ignored it or accepted it as he led his students along the wet pathways through the undergrowth surrounding the great temple. Silgal, the Calamarian Jedi Knight, walked directly behind Master Skywalker. Her salmon-colored skin glistened, and she blinked her large eyes contentedly in the rain. Kip Duran walked beside the cloned alien Dorskitty One, whose smooth skin and rounded features made him appear streamlined. Dorskitty One had pale olive-green skin, wide yellow eyes, and an open, innocent face. Kip and Dorskitty One had become close companions in the past year. Across the river, and through the rain, Kip could see the ruins of one of the Masasi temples, the tall, crumbling Temple of the Blue Leaf Cluster. Luke stopped at the bank and spread his hands at his sides as if drawing up lines of force from beneath the surface. "I'm pleased to be marking a passage. The river flows, as does the Force, never ending, always moving, as we must be. I brought you to Yavin 4 to begin your instruction. All I can do is point you on the path of the light side and open your minds to the possibilities of the Force. You must complete your own training. 3 of my trainees have decided to depart from the Jedi Praxium, the academy where we learn action and learn the Force." Kip, Dorskitty One, and Silgal stepped forward and turned to face the other Jedi trainees. "They have completed everything I know how to teach them. They have built their own lightsabers." As one, the 3 graduates flicked on the weapons. "You 3 must become guardians for the galaxy, protectors of the New Republic. You are Jedi Knights now. You must fight the dark side in all its manifestations." Silgal focused her round eyes on the glowing blade in front of her.
"I will return to my home world, where I'll serve both as a Jedi Knight and an ambassador."
Dorskitty One looked to Kip nervously. Luke then looked at Kip.
"It worries me that the Empire has been so quiet in the last couple of years. I still think the warlords must be planning something. I can imagine no greater service to the New Republic than finding out what's going on." Kip gripped Dorsk 81's arm and felt the clone's heart pounding. Dorsk 81 is coming with me. We'll slip into the uncharted areas of the core systems. Together, we'll try to discover what's become of the Empire. Master Skywalker addressed the other Jedi trainees. I urge you all to consider this. You must become guardians. Think of where you might go. Where you could do the most good. May the Force be with you. True night was impossible in the core systems. Stars clustered so closely together that even the blackest regions of space were a symphony of stellar flares and hot ionized gas. In a navigational hell like this, the beaten Empire hid among the uncharted systems where they could wait and recover, and war upon each other. Admiral Dalla walked, erect and alone, a proud example of Imperial training, as stormtrooper guards provided an armed escort into the rocky fortress of Supreme Warlord Harsk. Her face appeared chiseled in stone, still beautiful but now weathered. Faint lines were etched around her mouth from too many years of clenching her teeth, too many months trying to reunite the feuding warlords who squabbled over the Empire's remaining military might like neck battle dogs tearing a carcass. Dalla's eyes were haunted by shadows, memories of failure, but they flashed when she thought of how simple it would be to strike effectively against the clumsy New Republic. Even now, the rebels still hadn't managed to secure their hold on the galaxy, though the Empire had given them years in which to accomplish it. The stormtroopers formed a tight and comforting honor guard around Dalla as she strode down the fused corridors into the bedrock. Supreme Warlord Harsk had established his stronghold on a rocky planet that orbited close to a red giant star. In orbit, giant solar smelters provided energy and processed raw material to construct Harsk's personal fleet of Imperial-class star destroyers. Upon arrival on the planet, Dalla's loyal second-in-command, Kratos, had gone aboard the flagship Shockwave to inspect the weaponry. Harsk had completed construction on 12 star destroyers so far. Back when she had been ordered to guard Maw installation, the only woman the Emperor ever trusted to hold such a high command, Dalla had commanded 4 Imperial Star Destroyers. And in her private little war against the rebels, she had lost 3 of those ships. She could console herself that she had destroyed a rebel colony, blown up a convoy to a new military base, and attacked and damaged the water world of Calamari. But overall, her tactics had been woefully ill-considered. Her anger had blinded her to the shortcomings of her own schemes. Imperial authorities had commandeered Dalla's remaining troops, and they had scrapped her last remaining ship, the Gorgon. Dalla, though, did not give them the chance to reassign her to a fighting group, preferring instead to act as a freelance ambassador among the war leaders. In a large chamber whose walls had been carved from the rock of the molten world, Supreme Warlord Harsk had installed banks of observation screens. He spun around as Dalla entered.
Ah, Admiral Dalla.
The entire left half of Harsk's head was covered with a mass of thick pink scar tissue, a badge of honor from an explosion during the Battle of Endor.
Your reputation precedes you, he said. I know you have spent the last year trying to sow the seeds of unification. I admire that. I, too, grow tired of this endless civil war. But now you must cease this game. You must throw in your lot with the most powerful warlord, myself.
Dalla bristled.
I understand what you're saying, Supreme Warlord, and your fleet is indeed impressive.
She gestured to the Star Destroyers visible on the central screen.
But I'm not convinced that you could so easily overwhelm your competitors. The moment you grew stronger, the others would form alliances, and the struggle would be even bloodier than before.
The screen switched, and Commander Kratos appeared on it.
Admiral Dalla, excuse me, Warlord Harsk, we've detected incoming ships moving fast. I've spotted 70.
Warlord Harsk shouted,
Sound all alarms!
Dalla caught her breath as she recognized the fleeting forms of 73 Victory-class Star Destroyers, warships about half the size of Imperial Star Destroyers, but these ships made of a crimson alloy were fast and bristling with weapons.
Is this a drill? Dalla said. Are you trying to impress me?
Harsk glared at her.
No, that's High Admiral Teradoc.
he shouted to his star destroyers.
Lock on any target and fire!
Five of the Crimson ships took severe hits, but even those losses were insignificant compared to the sheer numbers in the attacking fleet. On the screen, Dalla could see Kratos snapping to his duty as ranking officer on the bridge, instinctively issuing orders. She was proud of her second-in-command. She had trained him well.
Concentrate all firepower,
Kratos said.
Select one target, destroy it, then move on to the next. Scattered fire won't accomplish anything.
Kratos took Warlord Harsk's flagship to the point of a phalanx formation. The shockwave was larger than the other Star Destroyers, more heavily outfitted with high-energy weapons. The shockwave targeted and fired, obliterating two more victory ships. Then Dalla realized with horror that the shockwave itself was the primary target of the combined assault of the victory ships. They converged like metal filings to a magnet, firing and firing.
We can't hold out much longer,
Kratos said.
Shields failing.
His dark eyes, wide with realization, seemed to be staring directly out of the screen at Dalla.
Admiral, I...
The shockwave cracked apart. The engine spewed unleashed energy in all directions.
Oh, Kratos, Admiral Dalla whispered. I'm sorry.
Achieving their target, the surviving victory ships, 62 of them according to the tally on the data screens, reversed course and streaked toward hyperspace.
Harsk growled. We won't stand for this. We'll get even. And I have the means to do so with you, Admiral Dalla.
Dalla fixed Harsk with a withering glare.
I have no intention of assisting you in your childish brawl, Warlord Harsk. You just lost me, the best commander I ever had. I will not perpetuate this...
Stormtroopers!
Harsk shouted. Admiral Dalla is going to command one of my star destroyers. She will lead our retaliatory strike against High Admiral Teradoc.
He scowled at her.
If she refuses, you will execute her immediately for treason.
Dalla was still stunned at the loss of Kratos, and numb with unchanneled anger.
All right, Harsk.
She intentionally denied him the title of Supreme Warlord. Give me full command of one of your star destroyers, and I will lead your fleet. Commanding the Imperial Star Destroyer Firestorm, Dalla approached the ice-laden ring of the planet Ruavong, where Harsk's spies reported that High Admiral Teradoc was hiding. Dalla stood frozen on the bridge, staring out at the red giant star. Inside her, a cauldron of frustration simmered. She did not want to fight Teradoc. She did not want to fight Harsk. She wanted them both, and all the other squabbling warlords, to fight the cursed rebels. There must be a better way, even if she had to force these others, kicking and screaming, to see it. Harsk's magnified image came to her over the comm system. He kept his half-scarred face turned squarely into the transmission range, flaunting both his ugly and his undamaged side.
Admiral Dalla, I am aboard the Star Destroyer Whirlwind at your flank. You will take the point in our attack. I trust you have already developed a strategy.
Warlord Harsk, I have just begun to study the data your spies gathered on Teradoc's fortress. Give me a moment to assess the possibilities for attack.
No. We lose our element of surprise with each second of delay. It'll be a full frontal attack with all weapons blazing.